afternoon, and welcome to truly another episode of We the People Radio. We've been swiveling microphones around now for like 2 minutes frantically, so hopefully you will be able to hear both of us, and everything will go according to Hoyle. The coughing and the wheezing and the... I've got the Marge Simpson voice. I don't know which one Bill's going to use today, but you know, that's just free. We're just talking about coronavirus, and
yeah, we're gonna demonstrate what happens when you get the coronavirus.
What it sounds like. Yeah. So anyway, we both turned up sick this week, but the truly frightening part is when you go out in public and then whatever you do, don't cough. They'll fall on you like a pack of dogs. They all start screaming, "Get away!" and they start running. It's like,
"Get back! Get back!"
I did have a guy do that. That was like, I was 10 feet from him and I was outside. I told him it's pretty unlikely he was going to catch asthma from me, but you know, anyway, after 58 years, that'd be quite a feat. So the Marge Simpson voice will be played by Aaron Ryan.
And I'm Bill Cundiff. And
you don't have a cartoon character today?
No, I don't think so. I think I'm going to stick with my alter voice.
You're going to be Nasal Billy?
Yeah, I'm going to be Nasal Bill. Yeah, so our sponsor this hour is Pape Machinery. They're our local John Deere Ag and Turf dealer. Pape carries everything John Deere and everything Honda and steel. So go by and see them. Generator season is coming. Yes, we do have a generator season in California. And it's right around the corner.
Right after the toilet paper season, which
that's
is
right.
Now.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up, because I understand they're giving away a free roll of toilet paper with every tractor quote. So go by. Whoa, wait, that's just in. They're out of toilet paper. Okay, so never mind on that. But go by and see them. They're at 3119 Twinview Boulevard in Shasta Lake City. Or you can get them on the phone at 226-9226 or on the web at papemachinery.com.
There you go.
There you are.
So before we get a whole ton of hate mail, let's face it, you know, some of this is, I mean, there is some cause for humor. And I guess if we have no cause for humor, well, what's the point, really? So we have two guests for you today, and we're going to chat about the coronavirus. We've got two microbiologists. So yet again, Bill and I will be speaking less. So if you're thinking about changing the channel, because, you know, it's us.
I really thought it was my big break.
your big moment in science.
And then I got sick. So,
In the science spotlight? Yeah. Not coming.
Yeah.
It's not coming for me either. No science spotlight here. I'm trying desperately to get to the... Here we go. Our first guest this show, which is airing, I should tell you, let's see, March 15th is when this... 2020 is when this is airing live. You can also catch up with us on the web at wethepeopleradio.us, and we're airing in the Reading area on Channel 23 on the American Uncensored News Network. So, our guest is Dr. Sean Lynn.
Is that the only one that would take you? Was the Uncensored?
The Uncensored News Network, AUN. Okay. Yep, yeah. That's who's doing it. Okay, yeah, back to the job here, Bill.
Oh, did I distract
back to the
you?
Back to the project at hand.
Yes, I looked away. I succeeded.
I looked away. Look away. Let's see. Okay, so he's got his bachelor's in biology and a master's in... from Syracuse, and then a PhD in microbiology from the University of Alabama at Birmingham. He's also a U.S. Army veteran. Thank you for your service, Dr. Lynn. Served for 9 years.
Thank you.
Initially as an enlisted soldier, and then as an officer in the Medical Service Corps as a microbiologist. Of note, and I'm sure we will do probably like a whole show on this sometime, but he is a survivor at Tiananmen Square, the massacre in 1989. He's also a Falun Gong practitioner engaging in human rights campaigns for the past 20 years and urging the Chinese Communist regime to stop the persecution of the Falun Gong. And if that is a new idea for you, please go to our website at wethepeopleradio.us. I want you to click on the China tab and mostly pick any show we have up there. We have been airing shows on China since November of 2018. There is a lot to learn, and there is much that we don't know all around the world. And I guess I should say welcome to our friends in Singapore, because over the past month, I think half of our listenership has been in Singapore, so that's been kind of interesting. So let's see, you're also a member of the Coalition to Advance Religious Freedom in China and a member of the Committee of Present Danger.
Yes. Can you hear me clearly?
We can. Sounds like you kind of have your hands full. Got a lot going on.
Okay, yeah. Yes. Thank you for the very nice introduction. Really, my pleasure to join the program this afternoon. And, so yeah, with the coronavirus, there's so much to talk about. Just wondering, where should we start?
Yeah, well, that's the thing. I guess, you know, we always hear the same thing. I know a good place to start. I think it was last week mostly. It could have been the week before. China decided to blame it on the U.S. Army. So since you're a U.S. Army veteran, maybe we start there. What's the likelihood that the Army took the coronavirus to Wuhan and, you know, left it there in a parcel someplace?
Yes, to me, that was a ridiculous claim from the Chinese government.
Yeah.
Of course, one of the excuses they mentioned that in Wuhan they held this world like a sports competition for the military personnel. Of course, U.S. has a delegation to join this competition. But there are so many other countries in this competition, too. So, I mean, the Chinese government can blame any other countries, too.
Oh, but they picked us. Well, they tried the CIA first, and then they moved on to the Army. So, I guess...
Yes, because it happened to be in Wuhan.
Yeah, I guess they'll just keep trying, you know, different, different things until they find something that works, when in reality it's just China. I mean, just goes back to them every time, kind of obvious.
Yes, I think part of the big scheme that the Chinese government is playing, try to blame the outside for the origin of the viruses. But I think one of the core issues is actually in Wuhan. The question still hasn't been answered. What will be the origin of the virus from Wuhan, and also what's the animal reservoir for the viruses, and who is the patient zero? All of these fundamental questions has not been answered by the Wuhan authorities or even the Beijing government. So I think even the WHO's special mission team went into China last month. They didn't find any. And they didn't have any opportunity, let's say. They didn't have any opportunity or chance to even investigate these core questions. So I think even that kind of joint mission with Chinese government was basically a cover-up by the Chinese government. So I think that one of the core issues, if we talk about the origin of virus, is still the potential lab leak, from Wuhan. I still believe that's a very high possibility. Even though, if we talk about lab engineer, if we just, say maybe even higher opportunity is a lab leak product from Wuhan. Because I remember there was an article by two scientists in China. One is in Wuhan in the Huazhong Science and Technology University. One is from Guangdong Province. So they published article actually identify a lab that's run by Wuhan CDC, Central for Disease Control and Prevention. And they said this lab is only about several hundred meters away from the Huanan Seafood Market. And this lab actually do animal studies. They collected a lot of the bats, several hundreds of bats from different regions in China. And one of the collectors was actually reported by Chinese media saying that he was actually attacked by the bats for multiple times. And he himself had to quarantine himself for two times at least, because the bat scratched him, and spot on him urines, and so he had to quarantine himself at least two times.
And this was a worker in the lab?
Yeah, this is a worker in the lab.
Okay.
And also there were problems with the lab setting animal staff to, after the experiment, they sell in the animals to probably local markets. And then in Beijing, there was one scientist, in, I forgot which lab, but he was actually sentenced to 10 years because he earned money by selling these kind of lab animals.
Lovely.
So definitely the lab management is a big issue in China.
Well, I think that, I don't know, it seems like most people are pretty, you know, pretty clear that the virus originated there, but China has not allowed anybody to go in and really help and oversee that. We've done a lot of chatting about their connection with the World Health Organization and all that, so maybe we can go down that rabbit trail when we get back. We've got to take a really quick break.
Okay.
You are listening to We the People. We'll be right back with Dr. Sean Lin. You can catch us online at wethepeopleradio.us. Today we are the them. We're the coffers. I'm the wheezer, Bill's the coffer.
So there you go.
Yeah, there you have it.
Yeah.
All right. So Dr. Lin, we have so many people on named Dr. Chen. If we call you if we accidentally call you Dr. Chen, just I'm gonna apologize now.
It's okay. No problem.
So we have a lot of Dr. Chens in our repertoire. Including your friend, Dr. Chen, who's on the next hour. Okay, so if it's pretty clear that the virus came there, you know, from Wuhan, like we thought, which is where the first people, you know, where the first cases popped up. Just out of curiosity, what's your? I mean, I'm assuming it's just basic. You know, the CCP doesn't want anybody messing with their propaganda. But is there any other reason that they would not want to have people come in and help them? You know, like our CDC or something like that.
Yes, that's one of the issues. I think that leads to a very high potential that probably the Chinese government know some. Secret projects, programs, research project maybe undergoing in Wuhan. So definitely the Wuhan Institute of Virology had a strong collaboration with Chinese military medicines. And not just in Wuhan alone, but also with other military medical units in China. For example, one unit in Nanjing, that's kind of on the east coast near Shanghai. And they also studied the bad coronavirus and actually identified virus strain, the bad coronavirus strains that has strong homologies with the SARS-CoV-2. And also the Wuhan Institute of Virology, Dr. Shi Zhengli's group, also has done a lot of research on this bad coronavirus. They collected viruses from Yunnan province on the southwest of China. And so these strains of virus, they identified together with the one of, from Nanjing, they showed 96% homologies with the SARS-CoV-2. So I think one of the biggest concerns is that some of the military project maybe were very aggressive trying to do gain-of-function studies. So I always think this is a great potential. That's one of the biggest reasons. Maybe the Chinese government did not want people to go into Wuhan to investigate the origin of the outbreak. Because if they let other scientists involving, they would definitely ask about the animal samples, about the animal reservoirs, and about the patient zero samples, and they probably would investigate the potential lab leak. Then it will lead to the Wuhan Institute of Virology or the lab in the Wuhan CDC, and then it will relate to probably the military operations. And I think they're doing some gain-of-function studies in there because Chinese government has put in biotechnologies and development as a main strategies for the 2025 project.
Interesting.
So they are very aggressive. Yes, they are very aggressive building P3, P4 labs in Wuhan areas.
Well, they're saying now that the cases of coronavirus are going way down, and that the big panic is over in China, and the cases are going way down.
Yeah, can we believe that though?
Yeah, do you have any indication if that's real or not?
I don't believe that at all.
I don't either. I mean, they've lied about all the rest of it. Why would they tell the truth about that?
Yes, to me, because it's a political strategy right now, because the Chinese government feel if they can quickly show to the Chinese people they can contain the outbreak, and then while the virus is spreading globally, now they can change the storyline saying anyone now getting an infection may be due to an import cases from, overseas.
Right.
So now we can be blamed for it.
Yeah, definitely. Actually, it's already happening. I saw friends in WeChat sharing some posts from China, talking about in Shanghai, in Beijing, they identify some travelers dying, symptoms and tested positive. And so now they started roll out this kind of blame on foreigners now. And at the same time, in Wuhan, other places, they quickly try to push out the patients in batches, saying, you're killed and going home now, even though they are probably still carrying the virus. They just try to create a whole false illusion that in China they already contain the situation. So any new outbreak now could be due to imported cases.
It's very dangerous.
Yeah.
So in their brilliance, they cured it, and now we're reinfecting them.
Yeah. Yes. But the problem is that in some other places in Wuhan, people used to be hospitalized in those temporary setup Fanchang hospitals. So many patients were just released, discharged in batches. That's unbelievable. Medically, it's impossible. They just in one day they can discharge hundreds of patients and you are ready to go home now. How could it be possible, right?
But, right.
It's magic.
They just do it.
Well, are you hearing, I know I've heard several reports that people are being reinfected after they've gotten through it. They get it a second time. Are you hearing any of that?
Yes, actually, I was reading some of the Chinese report mentioned about that people getting reinfected, and people, when they still are carrying the virus, when they're going back home, they infect their family members. And some of the factories, Wuhan steel factory, Wugang, in Chinese name we call it Wugang. So this steel factory, when they resume the production under the government's directives, and there are cluster outbreaks in the factory too. So I think many businesses will suffer this situation. And the government didn't even reimburse for all the costs for the quarantine, for the medical treatment, if they're under the government directing to back to production, and bringing the employees back to the factory. And so they're causing definitely a second wave of this outbreak.
Well, we had somebody, I don't remember who it was, telling us that there were a lot of people trapped in Wuhan who worked there but didn't live there. And they basically just had to live on the street. How's that all going?
Yeah, it's very hard to see reports on this one. I only saw some of the social media posts about these people suffering on the street. I see those photos, people living under the bridge, on the street. Because a lot of the people, they probably from the village side, right, came back to a big city like Wuhan to work. But the problem is that many of the local districts, they reject all of these foreigners, they call them foreigners, to come to Wuhan to work. They in the local district don't have the capacity to handle additional quarantine problems. And so how do they handle these new waves of people who want to come back to Wuhan to work? Because Wuhan usually they have millions of these migrant workers, right? So that's why about even 9 million people left Wuhan. before the Chinese Lunar New Year, right? Because so many people come to Wuhan to work. So now if you encourage, even just say 2 million people come back to Wuhan to work, and the local district is still under the political pressure, they need to contain the outbreak, and they need to block out this, they call it imported case now. So how do they handle these migrant workers? So many people just simply, many district like leaders just rejecting all of these people to reside into the previous like apartment these people leave.
Right.
So these people become, you know, like homeless immediately. So how can they survive, right? So, and they still need to find work too. So it's very tough for them. People working in the bigger factory may be relatively better because the factory provides dormitory for them. But the problem is that when they live in the dormitory, they also have higher chance to get
everybody's sick
in the dorm. Yeah.
Sure.
Any of us who've ever lived in dorms in college or anything like that knows one person gets sick, everybody goes down the drain.
So when this first hit epidemic levels in Wuhan, they sealed off the city, from what I understand. No, nobody in, nobody mm-hmm. out. Have they lifted that, and are they allowing people to go in and out now? Do you know?
They have not officially lifted the lockdown in Wuhan, but they kind of in different degrees, they loosen up the policies, and so allow people to come out to the district from their own neighborhood, from district to come out to buy food. And so, but it didn't like formally announce. Now we completely lifted the ban. So I think they still know the problem still ongoing in Wuhan. So they cannot officially kind of totally lift the lockdown.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, they want to create an impression to the residents of Wuhan that the situation is much better. The hospitals. The temporary hospitals are already closed. We don't need these additional facilities. So they try to deliver this message without totally lifting the ban.
Well, yeah, I guess if you're going to try to make everybody think that everyone is getting cured already, you better empty out your hospitals, or people will know you're lying again. I'm kind of curious, when we come back, we've got to take another quick break, but I'm really curious, how exactly do you whip up these temporary hospitals? Do you think they really did that? And I mean, they had a hotel that fell down. I'm thinking, if you slam up a hospital in no time at all, how does that stay up when a regular hotel falls down? So anyway, I have some architectural questions, I guess, when we return.
Okay. Yeah, we can talk about that after the break.
Yeah, we're going to come back with our guest, Dr. Sean Lin. You're listening to We the People. Please join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. Dr. Lin. So how do these guys make a hotel fall down, but they can build hospitals in like record time?
So I think actually the whole strategy for locking down the cities in such a draconian ways and in such a short notice, I think that measure actually need to be questioned, even though the Chinese government keep bragging that they, you know, taking these dramatic measures to intervene the virus transmission. But I think we need more scientific review on these measures as well. And regarding those temporary hospitals, of course, the Chinese People Liberation Army got involved, and you got the emergency fundings, and so they can quickly build up this kind of temporary hospital. But I actually questioned from the beginning when they announced they want to build this hospital, because in Wuhan, you know, if there are even two-star, three-star hotels and also student dorms as well as some large sports stadiums, why don't you do transformation of these facilities, you know, into a temporary hospital?
Yeah.
And so, right, so you some of these, you know, like low-scale hospitals, they don't have the central ventilation system, so even just, you know, small, like a window air conditioner, things like that. So you easily to put two persons in one room without causing too much cross-contamination, cross-infections.
Yeah,
but now you're building these large 1,000 people Fanchang hospitals and putting 1,000 people in there, and all these the one aspect, you're wasting the time to building this hospital, and the second time the ventilation system, the isolation procedures, the medical supply, all these is still a big problem in this temporary hospital. So you're probably creating a big opportunity for cross infection as well, and also the hygiene conditions. I saw reports mentioned like some of the hospitals only have one or two restroom facilities for 1,000 people, right? So you're creating more problems because the virus can also be transmitted through the fecal oral routes.
Yeah, they're actually making a worse problem
They're going to make
hospitals.
Sure everybody in there is sick.
Yeah.
Really sick.
You're guaranteed to have it when you go there.
So if they whip up some temporary hospital that fits 1,000 people, I don't understand that. Like, is there just tons of room there? They can just say, okay, we're putting it right here, and you have all these building materials. And, I mean, it takes people to build these, to build a building. I mean, how does that happen? Is that possible?
So this part of the Chinese government can definitely mobilize a lot of engineers and workers, like engaging some big construction company to do this. Because, you know, if the Chinese government treat it like a model engineering project, try to show the world they can do these things, you know, in a dramatic way, try to impress people, of course they can do it. But nobody knows whether this hospital is you know, expected, is qualified to be a really good facility for handling this kind of infectious disease. They just said we quickly build this hospital in 10 days, but
sure.
I didn't see any report saying they meet all the medical standards for handling the infectious disease.
Well, I'm thinking like three drops of rain and a stiff breeze and the thing blows over like a house of cards. I always say
it would be much faster if you just change the ventilation system in a two-star, three-star hotel.
Yeah, no kidding.
And make a temporary hospital. You can quickly get, you know, several thousands of beds available. Why you temporarily build a hospital from the ground?
Yeah, that just totally makes no sense.
Chinese government really should like to show off their capability.
Well, it's different to have.
It's just part of the propaganda. That's always the answer.
Yeah, you can have a facility that'll have a bed for a lot of people, but to have a facility capable of handling an infectious disease, that's a totally different ball game. And and I think
totally different. Yeah.
Yeah, when you look at it, you go, "Wow, that's a nice hospital," but the working part of it isn't set up for an infectious disease.
Well, besides that, when you're done with it, I guess you wait for the three drops of rain and the stiff breeze, and it just, it's not a hospital anymore. That whole idea is just bizarre to me. So the people that are being, how about this? If you live in Wuhan and you are quarantined there, do you get to go to the hospital or do you have to go home? Like, as opposed to the people who are living on the street. Do the people on the street who got stuck there in the quarantine, who live outside the city, do they get to go to the hospitals?
I was
just kind of curious what the rules are. If you know.
I don't know how do these people handle themselves, because right now, survival pressures, right? And then if they go back to hometown, how do they maintain their living? The Chinese government haven't done this kind of emergency plan to help these people who are living on, you know, month to month wages. And if they have got discharged from these kind of temporary hospitals, many of these temporary workers probably have to go home. But if they are released from this hospital, they're probably still a virus carrier. So maybe their local hometown also will be scared. Because many local people know the, you know, Chinese government is lying on this situation.
Yeah,
so many
of
the villages, many of the villages still locked down. Many of the villages surrounding Wuhan, they are still locked down. They haven't lifted the ban. So even these people get discharged from this kind of temporary hospital, it would be very hard for them to go back home too. But in the Chinese media right now, because it's so much censorship right now, the official media cannot report this kind of dark side, and the social media, if you talk about it, quickly got erased. So it's very hard to get this information, talk about people suffering. Yeah. I don't know the true situation.
Yeah, we don't know if people are getting sick. Are they getting tested? Are they just waiting until it gets so bad they have to be hospitalized, or if they can just fight it off and survive it?
A lot of people have to just fight it off at home, because when it was the peak in February, many people cannot access to the hospital. The hospital is overloaded, so many people just have to stay at home, try to fight it off at home. And at the same time, I think recently in March, when the government's propaganda tune changed, and when they tried to say they already closed this temporary hospital, number of new infections dropped to single digits. And the government tunes like this, so many of the temporary testing sites also stopped running the tests as well.
And we're seeing that
same,
what you don't know won't hurt you.
Yeah, we're seeing that same effect here. I mean, now that they're actually making these tests much more available to people, we're seeing the numbers skyrocket, which doesn't necessarily mean more and more people are being infected. It's just that more and more people are being tested and found positive.
Who may or may not be sick.
Yeah, exactly. So I think the whole testing thing is skewing the numbers a little bit as well.
Yeah, so definitely for Chinese government, they are so aggressive and ambitious on their propaganda, trying to say they are kind of winning the war against epidemic. So they are not just bragging about how many people got cured. They also try to brag they have very low number for new infections. I think this second goal is really, from the medical aspect, I think it's kind of ridiculous. You have such a large number of people got infected. The new infection number all suddenly just like a skydive, you know.
Right.
Sure.
From a cliff. There's no way. It doesn't fit into any transmission models. But that's just Chinese government's propaganda model.
Yeah, that just doesn't work that way.
So I keep hearing in our media, because I'm always, you know, I'm always listening with sort of a, you know, I hear all of you in the back of my head whenever something from China comes up, and I'm thinking, our government's saying, oh, look, you know, people are getting, I heard it this morning, it looks like people in China are, you know, the cases have really, really dropped, so, you know, we think we only need to you know, quarantine people for 14 days because that's all the longer it takes. It sounds a little bit like our government is using the Chinese information as fact. Do you think they are?
It is bizarre. Even today I saw New York Times talk about, you know, Chinese government is buying time for the world. They cannot repeat the Chinese government's tone as well. I was really kind of stunned that even such a direct copy of Chinese government's propaganda.
Oh, okay. All right. So it isn't just me. Yeah, because I heard that and I thought, what the heck? I mean, don't they realize? Look at Sue and Bill. They're waxing up on their Purell. The more we talk, the more hand sanitizer they're using.
I'm feeling dirty.
Yeah, I think overall the Western society really need to be alert to that. They don't trust the data from the Chinese government. I mean, one example is in Taiwan. The Taiwanese government was so clear that they don't trust about the Chinese government's data, and also they don't trust WHO's data interpretation as well. So when the Chinese government informed that they had probably new coronavirus on December 31st last year, almost immediately the Taiwanese government started to check passengers coming from mainland China. They sent medical staff to get on the plane, you know, do body temperature inspections before anybody can be off the plane.
Sure.
So they react quickly because they don't trust the Chinese government.
Right.
Well, that's actually
from previous lessons. You know,
yeah. There's no outside verification on a lot of their claims. And yeah, until there is, I think we have to take.
Well, when you have an infectious disease, you know, assuming that the people who've been lying just turned over a new leaf is probably that all is bad timing.
Yeah.
I mean,
probably not.
Just flat bad timing.
Yeah.
All right. So we've got to take another quick break. Sorry. Our usual jovial selves are just screwed up today. We're screwed up. We're in here with too much hand sanitizer and we're stuffy, for heaven's sakes, talking about virus. And we watched that idiot series last night called, what is it, Contagiousness or something?
Contained or...
idiot thing on Netflix. Before we go to break. All right, so we're watching this stupid thing on this virus on Netflix, which is some big long series. Seems like it's going on forever. And I'm going to go out in the garage to the refrigerator in the garage and go get something, and the doorknob won't work. I could not get out of my house. I'm like, Bill, is it me or is it the doorknob? Come over here.
I could see panic in her eyes.
It was like,
she was locked in.
It wasn't really, but it was really kind of weird. It's like, okay, we're locked in our own house. So we had to go
government.
We had to go get in from the garage. It just was weird. It seems like the whole world is weird and our town's out of toilet paper and people have all gone crazy. So, There you go. You have an update from California now. That's what's happening here.
Let yourself lockdown.
Yeah. We're just hoping to survive the great toilet paper shortage of 2020. Oh, my gosh. We'll be right back with our guest, Dr. Sean Lin. We'll be all serious, too, when we come back.
That's right.
Yeah, get back on serious.
Yes.
You can find us online at wethepeopleradio.us. It is sort of fitting.
It is.
The song is called Living in the Past. In the past when we didn't have runs on toilet paper.
Yeah.
And people hung out together.
Yeah, I went to the grocery.
And you could cough in public without being assaulted.
I went to the grocery store yesterday and I was kind of laughing a little bit that I'd say 3/4 of the carts that went by, people had like their limit of 4 rolls in the cart.
Oh, they were limiting to 4 rolls?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Wow. Limit 4 per cart.
Okay, so the great toilet paper shortage is real.
And it was all gone by the time I got out of there. Big, huge, empty row of paper products.
What's it doing where you are? Are you in Maryland?
I'm in Maryland, yeah.
So
similar situations, yeah. People do stock up those toilet papers, too.
See, we're never having a toilet paper shortage.
In Costco.
Yeah. It's just funny to me that people would wait for something like that. I mean... I told Bill, I said, see, aren't you glad you have me? You're never going to have a toilet paper shortage. See, I'm the person who bought her funeral plan when I was 22.
Yeah, she's on her. she's on hurricane watch 12 months out of the year.
My dad was in the insurance industry.
Yeah, we have a saying in our house.
We prepare.
It could be the end of the world tomorrow. Make sure you stock up.
Every time Bill puts 2 cans in the cart at the grocery store, I put 2 more, you know, and he's like, end of the world. I'm all, yeah.
End of the world.
Just in case.
Just in case.
It sort of makes sense, you know. It's such a large pandemic. People are panicked. So even though, I mean, all the mainstream media and all the, you know, experts try to calm people down, but people naturally will be panicked, you know.
Because
after all, this SARS-CoV-2 is very serious, very different from the SARS-CoV-2. And even for its transmission, I see a report saying that the SARS-CoV-2 can even survive 3 hours in aerosol and then 24 hours in cardboard and 2 to 3 days on plastic and stainless steel surface. So, you know, the virus has high transmissibility, too, compared to SARS-2. And so that's why it's hard to contain it, even more, making more unrealistic for China to contain it in such a short period of time.
Right.
I also saw a report, a medical report on Lancet, and that was actually done by Chinese medical doctors from two hospitals in Wuhan. And so they surveyed about 191 patients, and among them, actually 54 died. So you can see the death rate is almost 28%. That's very high death rate in hospital deaths. And 48% people have comorbidity. And so it was really tough for hospital to treat it too. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's it's kind of makes sense that people are panicked about this situation. But
don't you think that if they publish the numbers of people, like let's say every single year when you have tens of thousands of people who die from the flu, whatever the flu is that year, if they published those numbers and covered it like this is being covered, don't you think people, well, okay, after a while people would stop listening, but don't you think people would have panicked before? I mean, there are a lot more people who die from the regular flu than this.
Yeah, for flu, yeah. In China, actually, every year, almost 88,000 people die of flu. That's on previous, kind of official data, if you analyze it, it's about 88,000 people.
Just on any given year because they got the flu?
Yeah, because it's in a large population, and you know, tens of millions of people got infected. And U.S. is about 18,000 people each year. So it depends on year, may vary a little bit. But overall, yeah, because, you know, the flu, it's just so endemic in the population. People get used to it. People are not so scared about it.
Right.
And of course, the symptom is not so scary like SARS-2. For this SARS-CoV-2, it has high chance for senior people to develop multi-organ failure. So
for them to develop SARS-2. For them to develop a what?
Multi-organ failure.
Oh, multi-organ failure. Sorry about that. I had to re-listen to that. Develop a what?
Yeah,
sounded scarier when you said it.
Yeah, so it's not just breathing difficulty. Many patients' symptoms develop very fast.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And so that's why, clinical-wise, it's also scary. So it's high pathogenicity plus high transmissibility. That's why it's combined forces. Because usually in the past, like Ebola, very, very high pathogenicity. But the transmissibility usually low, but this SARS-CoV-2 kind of find a middle way in between. So it has high transmissibility, but also have relatively strong pathogenesis. So it's hard to handle. Yeah.
Okay. So, do you think having everybody? I mean, just you know, from what you know about science and medicine and that sort of thing, does what we're doing make sense to cancel? You know. Ball games and to keep people home for a couple of weeks. Do you think that actually has the potential to do something positive for this?
I think actually it's a very important measure to slow down the virus spread too.
Okay.
And because the social distancing definitely reduce the chance for people contacting each other and then reduce the virus to be spreading among the community. And so there are different studies with different disease intervention models. So actually, if you're doing this kind of social distancing, it's quite effective, even more effective than a hard quarantine down in an isolation lockdown city. It could be even more important.
Yeah.
And so.
Well, I think it's easy for people to say, oh, geez, that's we don't really have any around here. We live in a rural area that I don't think we've had any reported cases in our area. But, you know, it will. We will get them here.
Well, people are kind of going one way or the other. You know, on the one hand, you have the people, like, I was outside. I was, like, 10 feet away from this guy, and I coughed. And I've had asthma for 58 years. So I get this periodically. You know, my lungs fill up with fluid. I wheeze. You know, I sound bad. And so I kind of coughed. You know, it wasn't like I had my mouth hanging open. I coughed on him like a horse or something. Although it would have been fun, but I didn't. And, you know, so I kind of cleared my throat and coughed. And he just started screaming and yelling, get away, get away. And I thought, okay. You know, I mean, really? So people are kind of going that direction. Or then you have the other direction that says, are you kidding me? This is ridiculous. I'm going to, you know, just go do all my regular stuff. I'm not going to change anything because these guys are probably hyping it like they did the last snowstorm that never came. So,
well, right now, I think the storm is already here. Just people definitely need to be more cautious than usual.
So staying home makes sense.
Yes, okay. Stay home will help a lot. And also, you know, don't rush to all potential, like, locations for getting tests right now. I think
The test isn't going to do a whole lot for you.
Yeah, I think the test of course it still take times to make it available for everyone needed. But at the same time, I also, you know, want to point out that actually even this year, the common coronavirus also it's another beta coronavirus, and so it's also circulating in the community as well. So plus the flu, there are many respiratory diseases. You know, they are at high peak at this season.
Right.
So many people have respiratory syndrome, may not be, you know.
Yeah. I mean, I have this
COVID too.
I have the same thing all the time. So I mean, if it was different than every other time I've had it for 58 years, I guess I would be alarmed, but I'm mostly not at this point. So, hey, we need to have you back so we can talk about Tiananmen Square and all that fun stuff.
Sure, love to. Yeah.
I knew we'd get gypped out of all of that, and that was really kind of what I wanted to know. But thank you so much, Dr. Sean Lin. And
thank you
for being our guest. We got all this information there at WeThePeopleRadio.us. We'll be right back with our friend Dr. Chen. Bye.